Hello, nurse station.
Calling all oncology nurses.
Are you ready to sharpen your practice, maximize your impact, and stay on the cutting edge of oncology care?
Then you found the right place. Welcome to Onc Nurse On Call. We're your hosts, Patricia Jekyll
and Stephanie DeRogier. Join us on the new podcast by Oncology Nursing News as we deliver maximum value in minimal time.
Every minute counts. Let's make it count for your patients. Thank you, Kelly, for coming. If you could just give us your background and what led you to this kind of work, and then what first inspired you to start conversations with Kelly.
Yeah. First of all, thank you for having me as a guest. And so, again, my name is Kelly Gresslegs. I'm out of Minneapolis in Minnesota, and I have been somehow in the field of oncology, palliative care, grief, and hospice for close to 30 years, three decades. I originally started because I had an opportunity at the university to work in hospice, and it led me to some beautiful work and beautiful connections. Then for 17 years was in private practice, particularly with oncology and grief, which they kind of go hand in hand, right?
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. I am now currently the founder of Conversations with Kelly, which is an online platform for anybody looking to heal and who might be suffering from loss, illness, whatever it may be, and a keynote speaker. So that's one of my favorite things to do is go around and speak with practitioners. I do anything from oncology practitioners to funeral directors and the whole gamut in between. So honored to be here and have this beautiful kind of authentic conversation with you, Patty, who I adore.
Yes. Thank you. I adore you too. So what inspired you to start Conversations with Kelly? And I'm going to add a little thing here. When you talked about funeral directors, we interviewed somebody last month who wrote an article called Last Responders, the people that are there for the end of life. And she included funeral directors in her work, which I thought it was like an aha moment, you know, 40 years in oncology. And I did not think about the funeral directors, the people that do the hair and makeup. So just wanted to put that out there because you talked about funeral directors. And I think it's an area where we as oncology people have not thought about.
Well, and what I'm trying to work with the funeral directors is for them to look at themselves as a continuum of care, like no different than when we get a patient transferred to palliative care from oncology or hospice from oncology. So what inspired me to do Conversations with Kelly, honestly, was the amount of conversations I was hearing in my practice about people being lonely and not feeling like they connected to others who were experiencing deep pain, loss, illness, whatever it may be. So I created this online platform, which is on Facebook, called Conversations with Kelly. And then from that, have gone out to do more speaking, whether it's with patients, whether it's with professionals, but it's been a launch pad. My mom died when I was 11, and from her death came this kind of epiphany of, because when she died in an ICU, and it really was not a great death. And so once I went to college, didn't necessarily want to do this work, but I was called to it and I had a professor steer me. And it's now in my mom, Sandy's honor, trying to help people have better lives until they die, and then also good deaths. I mean, that's part of it too. So that's part of our mission. Our mission at Conversations with Kelly is very simple. It's to relieve suffering. And that can come on lots of gamuts, right? We know our patients suffer on many levels, whether it's psychologically, physically, spiritually, emotionally, whatever that may be. So that's really what prompted it. And then it just became so big that I decided to leave private practice so that I could speak to larger groups, touch more people, bring the messages from the best teachers in the world, which were my patients over the 30 years, and then bring it into the larger space, if you will.
Well, what an honor to your mom. Wow, the work that you've done. And in her memory, I think that that's absolutely amazing. So, congratulations
Thank you.
on being able to take this forward and really spearheading these conversations that we know are so critical and oftentimes not happening in healthcare settings, other settings. People don't talk about it. So, thank you for doing this work. Was there a moment in your life when you realize the power of conversation and connections?
To be honest, again, talking about reflecting back on my mom's death, that lack of conversation, and it was in the 80s, so it was prior to a lot of the palliative care and hospice experience. My mother was also in her 30s, and so I think the whole goal was, and she had heart disease, but the whole goal was to keep her going, and no one wanted to talk about hard stuff. So in some ways, it was the conversation that didn't happen that encouraged me to dedicate my life and my life work to having the conversations. But I can bring up a scenario where I was working with a young mother who had, I believe it was metastatic lung cancer, and had small children. If the physician and the nurse and myself have the conversation with her about the reality of her disease, she would not have recorded things for her children who were kindergarten and younger. She would not have written them letters for their weddings. She would not. And so now those kids, I know, have graduated, gotten married, etc., and have received those gifts from her, and it's been life-changing for them. So that is one that just kind of sticks out. There's many, but it was that pushing that medical team to tell her, even though she didn't want to hear it, but pushing to tell her that this is where things are at. When we have these conversations, it doesn't necessarily make people die sooner. It just helps people live
No.
better,
Right.
right? I mean,
Right, exactly.
and it gave her opportunities. It gives people opportunities. They can choose what they want to do with it. But if we
Right.
don't have these conversations, I mean, I've even gone as far as to say it's kind of malpractice, to not, malpractice might be a hard word, but it's neglectful practice, put it that way, to not share with people the reality of their disease. And they can say to you, I don't want to hear this. I don't want to hear this.
Right.
And yet, and that's a whole podcast about how still to talk with them about that. But this gave that mother, it was a hard conversation. And honestly, she lived like another 2.5 years post that conversation. So she lived longer. But part of it too is she had this weight lifted from her about doing these cards and doing these videos and doing all of these things. And the physician said to me, she told me, she said, this was a game changer for me in my practice. Because I saw the outcome of having these conversations with people, it didn't make her die quicker. And they said, so that was always my fear, is that people would quote unquote give up if I
Right.
had these conversations. I'm like, oh no, no, that's not often how it goes. And so, how beautiful. And that was so many years ago, and it still impacts me to this day.
And us oncology nurses that have been present with patients doing their what I'll call legacy work, what they're leaving for their children, because I too cared for a lot of people in their 30s and 40s, and leaving behind or having smaller children that they're not going to get to see grow up. So I would see a sense of, oh, Patty, I wrote these letters that I talked to the palliative team about, and a sense of relief, like I've done some work here that's going to be important for my children. So 100% agree with that, and encourage people to have those conversations. And that kind of brings me to my next question of conversation. We oncology nurses think we're unique. We always have. Why are these conversations so uniquely challenging in oncology?
I think in some ways there's a foundation for these conversations that we bring to all of the disciplines of medicine. However, I will say this in oncology, and I've watched this conversation evolve over the years, and where it stands now in 2026 is there are so many more options for treatment than there
Right.
were even 10 years ago. So that's the
Absolutely.
good news. And in that same space, it can make these conversations harder because patients have been told that there's so much more in the toolbox. There's da-da. And so they may not want to have these conversations because they're focused on, well, there's 20 more treatments. So it can make the conversation more difficult because, A, there's more treatment options in oncology. I think it's also difficult, to be honest, because we can get very, very close to our patients in oncology. We can see them for a long time. We see them at their most vulnerable state, depending upon what kind of nurse you are. You know, are you an infusion nurse? Are you a clinic nurse? Are you a hospital nurse? However, we get close to them. We see them at truly this, there's this portal that we are invited to enter when you work in oncology, no matter what your discipline is, but particularly for nursing, you are invited in to that portal. And in that portal is a patient who is scared, who is angry possibly, who is uncertain, living in uncertainty and all of these things, and we're invited in to be with them. And sometimes that involves conversation, sometimes that involves silence, you know, whatever that may be. But oncology nurses are unique in that we can see patients for a very, very long time, and we get to know their families. We get to see them through graduations, through weddings, through progression of disease, recurrence, whatever that may be. And so we have a human heart connection with a lot of our patients. And I think that's where sometimes these conversations can be difficult, particularly for the patient that doesn't want to hear it because they, quote unquote, trust us and like us and want to keep it light with us, and they don't want to go there with us. I mean, and so sometimes, you know. And quite frankly, I do have to say this, that sometimes they're doing it to also protect us as providers. There's a there's a
Interesting.
there is a phenomenon, it's called the good patient syndrome. And sometimes that involves they don't want to complain, or they don't want to let us know how hard it is. Number one, because they don't want to let us down because we worked so hard. But number two, I have heard patients tell me, I love Nurse Jane so much. I don't want to break down in front of her because that'll make her sad. And then I don't want to see her. And it's like, wow, this is a phenomenon that's really starting to come to light for a lot of us that are interested in this work.
And as we know them for many years, they also see our lives too. Oh, you got
100.
married, or when's your baby due? But when I had both of my children, my patients brought me baby gifts. They would come into the clinic carrying gifts, and it's they're living our lives with us also. And it's a really intimate space, obviously, to be in with a patient, but they want to celebrate you also. So I think that makes it get a little messy for oncology nurses. And it brings me to my next question. How do you balance truth with compassion? And I will tell you what I was taught in undergraduate, and I don't think we discussed it at all in grad school. Don't falsely reassure your patients. And I have to say, probably the first 20 years of my career, I was falsely reassuring patients right and left because I had to give them hope, and I wasn't always honest. So how does a nurse approach that?
So when we know our patient, one of the things we often will ask patients in the beginning is, You talk about life goals, et cetera, but you check in with them every 3 to 4 months because those can change. Those opinions can change. Sometimes in the beginning, patients are like, I don't want any statistics. I don't want anything. Okay. And then they can change. So one of the things that's important is not, it's not a one and done ask. It's not like, do you want to know this stuff? But the thing that's interesting about hope is that it changes. And hope often starts big. So it starts with the cure, of course. I mean, that is often. And so when people say, I don't want to falsely reassure them, that tells me that we're probably not, we haven't probably evolved with the cycle of hope. So we're still stuck on what the original hope was. So now they're terminal and we know that a cure is not possible. Okay, but there is so much, Patty, still that people can hope for. And
Absolutely.
I mean, I have seen patients living with metastatic breast cancer for 17, 18 years, having a pretty good life. However, their original hope did not come to fruition. You know,
Right.
they were not cured. And yet they've moved on to, okay, now my hope is I want this treatment to work. Now my hope is I can eat my food and not feel nauseous, whatever. See the son graduate from high school in 5 years. It's all these things that we have to be able to hold hope with our patients. So, I mean, again, I've seen hope at the end of life. And so we just know that hope has an evolution cycle that we want to join our patients with that. And so that where it becomes tricky is if we're stuck with them in that space of, well, this was their hope, and if this doesn't come true, then there's it's hopeless. That's not true. I think part of our jobs, and it's not about being Pollyanna. I think part of
No.
our roles as nurses, as social workers, as physicians, as anybody working in oncology is to help introduce patients to that evolution of hope cycle, that hope changes, that hope evolves, that but hope is always present. And so to truly, I mean, you could be in there changing their dressing and they're feeling hopeless because they just got bad news. So then we ask them, what other hopes we could you possibly have? You know, what other hopes may there be? And they may have to be in that space right now of that loss and that grief over my original hope is kind of it's gone. And I can't. So we may just have, again, what I said earlier, sometimes our invitation involves silence and sometimes it involves conversation. But both are being present with that patient. But kind of, you know, one of the things we can do with our patients is help them dream.
That's it for this episode of Onc Nurse On Call. You can find the detailed show notes at www.oncnursingnews.com.
If you found value in this episode, hit subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast and leave us a review. It helps other oncology nurses find our show.
Join us again in 2 weeks for another power-packed evidence-based episode.
Until then, keep leading with excellence.